Throughout the 1920s and 30s, good buddies and premier Harlem Stride pianists Fats Waller and James P. Johnson collaborated on writing theatrical shows and performing keyboard duets on radio and records. After Waller's untimely death in 1943, his former teacher and friend Johnson was often asked to celebrate Waller's music on disc, radio, and in prestigious concert venues. I am Dave Radler. Welcome to Jazz Rhythm, an exploration of the lore, culture, and personalities of early jazz. Here's Waller demonstrating his complete mastery of the Harlem Stride piano style pioneered by James P. Johnson, Willie the Lion Smith, and others in his 1929 tune, Goin' About. In this hour, James P. Johnson expert Mark Borowski and I will explore the musical friendship of good buddies, Fats Waller and James P. Johnson, and we'll hear them playing each other's tunes both together and separately. I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm. I'm joined for this hour of a five-part tribute to Thomas Fats Waller by Mark Borowski. Welcome, Mark.
Dave, thank you so much, and it's really a pleasure to be here, especially in this centennial year of the birth of Thomas Fats Waller.
Mark has devoted himself to the study of Harlem Stride piano and is working with the Johnson family and James P. Johnson Foundation to preserve the memory, artifacts, and music of James P. This is important work, preserving the memory of a remarkable American genius. And of course, Waller himself was another genius, one who was cultivated by Johnson in his early years and all through his life.
I would add that we are extremely fortunate that the Johnson papers have come to reside at the collection of the Institute for Jazz Studies in Newark, New Jersey, Rutgers University.
What sort of materials do these include?
Many handwritten manuscripts by Johnson, letters in the Johnson collection and in the Waller collection, many artifacts and private papers.
In this hour, we're going to really talk about the connection between Fats Waller and James P. Johnson, which is a very intimate one.
That's correct. Fats, as a boy, actually, was introduced to James P. Johnson. Fats was in his middle teens at the time. Johnson then was the reigning king of Harlem-style piano, and Fats was fortunate that Johnson took an immediate liking to him, saw the great potential that existed in Fats, took him under his wing, and instructed him both methodically and lovingly.
And so as early as Waller's very first recordings, 1921, he would have been 16 or 17, something like that, 17 or 18, we can hear this affinity in their music.
Johnson was the leading piano roll artist in the piano jazz world at the time and had just started to make acoustic sound recordings. He had Fats take up both of those venues.
So we've got an example of how close together these two artists are in 1921, 22, 23. Muscle Shoals and Toddlin' Blues.
Muscle Shoals Blues was done at Fats' first session for OK Records in 1922, which was the same company for which James P. Johnson recorded his classic Carolina Shout and Keep Off the Grass. And it's the very earliest example of Fats' recorded piano solo. Todlin was recorded 1 year later by James P. Johnson. Todlin is an example of the slow stride style that James P. would play, taken at a very relaxed tempo and not nearly as, at least doesn't sound as technically challenging as either Keep Off the Grass or Carolina Shout. And perhaps for that reason, it was a little bit easier for the young Fats to emulate.
This is Jazz Rhythm Jumping Swing, classic blues and hot jazz, old and new. And in this hour, Mark Borowski is helping me explore the interesting connections between James P. Johnson and Fats Waller, but also some of the development of Waller as a piano player.
Yes, what I'm hoping that we'll be able to demonstrate in this hour is that how, under the influence of the great James P. Johnson, this young kid, clearly with tremendous raw talent, was able to develop into one of the greatest jazz piano stylists of all time.
We find all throughout the 20s that these two are making recordings together, both of their own music and, for some reason, two piano guests in little orchestras like Johnny Dunn's.
It was an acknowledgement of how far Fats had come as an artist and what high regard James P. held him in that they were able to record together. Again, Johnson in the 1920s was the dean of jazz piano in the world.
So we find them in 1928 working with the trumpeter Johnny Dunn.
We can hear the duets between Fats and James P. on original Bugle Blues.
Original Bugle Blues, the recordings with trumpeter Johnny Dunn's original Jazz Hounds were from 1928. Johnson also apparently invited Waller onto one of his 1928-29 sessions.
That's correct. It's a similar setup with Fats and James P. playing duets behind the band. Thank you.
we've heard Chicago Blues, and that was Jimmy Johnson and his orchestra from mid-1928 to late 1929. I'm Dave Redlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm, Jumping Swing, Classic Blues, and Hot Jazz, Old and New. I'm joined by Mark Borowski, who has spent a lot of time listening to, studying, and helping to preserve the works of the Harlem Stride players of the 20s, particularly James P. Johnson.
Well, I would add at this point that these sessions were organized by Perry Bradford, who was a sheet music publisher at the time, also a vocalist, and he was intimately involved with both Fats and James P. at the time. He was the person who originally published Johnson's Yamacraw, which was a rhapsody that Johnson composed in the 1920s. It was his first foray into the world of classical music. Johnson, when Yamacraw was performed at Carnegie Hall, could not get out of his contractual obligation to conduct the orchestra of Keep Shufflin'. And instead, he had his protege, Fats Waller, appear as the piano soloist for this performance. And Fats, too, as you have demonstrated in one of your previous programs, is also a very accomplished classical musician.
Now, clearly also at some point, Waller was not so much a protege anymore of Johnson. He was really developing as an artist in the mid to late 20s.
That's right, yeah. His rise was meteoric. And certainly by the mid-1930s, at least in the public eye, he had clearly outshone his teacher.